Today on Annenberg Radio News.
From the wonderful world of sports, we bring you Home Run Derby, where each week the leading home run hitters of the major leagues.
We take you to the first Wrigley Field in a part of South LA history, where baseball is back and better than ever. Good afternoon and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, November 6th. I'm Jennifer Chapsky. Police are searching for a motive, but not a suspect, in the murder of a pregnant woman in South Los Angeles. Sam Farber has the story.
The dead woman was just 22 years old. The car was driven by one of the participants in a massive street fight at the intersection of Slauson and Western Monday afternoon. LaShawn Tour was one of hundreds of witnesses who saw the midday brawl. She says it was only young women fighting. 15 to 20 of them started in a Big Lots parking lot and continued fighting across Western Avenue at a gas station parking lot.
The males was trying to break up the fight, but they couldn't. It was out of control.
One of the women left the fight, but not for long.
I seen a car come from here and come and hit those people that was there and stuff. And then she took off going down Western.
Shante Blanche was killed and two other young women were injured after a gold convertible smashed into them. LaShawn Tour says it was intentional. She saw the girl driving the car motion her hands at her targets before speeding up and hitting them. She added that it did not look like a gang fight, and LAPD says there are no known female-only gangs, although local gangs do take girls. Unique Bishop was driving the car. The 21-year-old turned herself in to authorities about 5 hours later and was booked for murder. Sam Farber, Annenberg Radio News.
34 more defendants in the Florencia 13 gang case were arraigned this morning in federal court. The defendants are primarily lower-level drug dealers. Police say the Latino gang targeted African Americans in South L.A. So far, 102 alleged gang members have been arraigned. Reverend Jesse Jackson spoke in South L.A. today about the problems with foreclosures. He says the government needs to help.
We're looking at a tsunami coming our way. This is a great economic Titanic, and we must move now. The government has some responsibility to convene the appropriate forces now.
Jackson blames mortgage lenders for the rise in foreclosures. Hollywood writers were back on the picket lines today as the Writers Guild strike entered day two. Caitlin Funaro reports.
About 50 writers carrying picket signs and wearing red Writers Guild t-shirts gathered in front of Sony Studios in Culver City. Screenwriter Dwayne Adler has been a guild member since 1996.
This isn't a good time for any of us. You know, we're all putting our careers and our livelihood at stake to be out here because these issues are important and they're not just about us. They're about the future of not just writers, but of all of us working in the industry.
Writers also had some company on the picket line today. Scenic painter Rita Gardner was one of those outside of the guild that turned down paying jobs to march with the writers and show their support for the industry as a whole.
We need to show much more solidarity. You know, the painters, carpenters, producers, writers, musicians, caterers, everybody.
It all works together.
It does. It really does. Because not one can do it without the other. And when one part hurts, all of it hurts.
Television shows such as The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and The Daily Show are already running repeat episodes, and production has stopped on at least six sitcoms. The Writers Guild is asking for a larger share of revenue from DVD sales, as well as from content shown on the internet and other new media. Caitlin Funaro, Annenberg Radio News.
Now a look at the weather. Partly cloudy skies are going to give way to cloudy and cold evenings with temperatures in the low 50s. Don't let the misty morning marine layer fool you. Highs tomorrow and Thursday will be in the low 70s. Still to come on Annenberg Radio News, one South LA family gets help in the rising mortgage crisis. Recently hired manager Joe Torre begins a new chapter to baseball in Los Angeles. But our David Chong takes a look back at baseball before the Dodgers came to town.
Go, 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 go.
It's Angels versus the Padres this afternoon in South Los Angeles. Dozens of small boys and girls scramble around a well-kept Little League field while parents cheer from the sides. Little League games are played every Saturday here in Gilbert Lindsay Park, a small public park at Avalon Boulevard and 41st Street. The park has become a center for the community after surviving years of disrepair and neglect. Gisette Baena was out watching her three sons play baseball.
Well, I actually grew up in this area, and I actually live a block away. I live here all my life. So basically, this park was really ugly back in my days. And they've constructed a lot, and it's really nice. I mean, they did a lot of services here where I'm actually proud of the way that they're working this park now.
It's fitting that baseball has brought life back to the park, considering its place in L.A. baseball history.
From the wonderful world of sports, we bring you Home Run Derby, where each week the leading home run hitters of the major leagues will compete in a home run hitting contest.
Home Run Derby was a late 1950s TV show where baseball greats like Mickey Mantle and Hank Aaron battled head-to-head in a home run competition, and they played in Wrigley Field, the original Wrigley Field. It was a double-decker baseball stadium that could seat over 20,000 fans, and it once stood right in the same spot as Gilbert Lindsay Park.
It was a pretty magnificent structure.
Richard Beveridge is president of the Pacific Coast League Historical Society. The Pacific Coast League was made up of six minor league teams, including the Los Angeles Angels. That team played at Wrigley Field from the mid-1920s until about 1956.
It was built in 1925, and at the time it was considered the finest minor league park in the United States. It had a very distinctive feature in that it had a clock tower. I think it was about 10 stories high. You could get a tremendous view over it to the ocean from that tower.
Chewing gum magnate William Wrigley Jr. built the stadium in 1925 after buying the LA Angels. A year after it was built, he renamed the Chicago Cubs' stadium as the other Wrigley Field.
Willie Mays at bat. Line drive out into left field, and it is over the wall, and it's 1-0 Mays.
Teams from
front.
The Negro Leagues also played exhibition games at South LA's Wrigley Field. Beveridge says it was the place for locals to watch baseball before the major leagues moved in.
As far as Los Angeles is concerned, Wrigley Field was the focal point of baseball for a little over 30 years in the middle of the century there.
Beveridge himself went to a game in 1947 when he was 10 years old.
But it was fairly spectacular, and you can imagine when you're young, it looks bigger than it really was.
Brooklyn Dodgers owner Walter O'Malley bought the Angels and Wrigley Field in 1957. He traded the Angels after 1 year and then brought the Dodgers to L.A. O'Malley wanted the Dodgers to play in the Coliseum because it could seat more fans. He ended up giving Wrigley Field to the city in exchange for building Dodger Stadium in the Chavez Ravine area. Wrigley Field soon became obsolete, and it was razed in 1966.
It didn't last a long time, but it holds fond memories from a lot of people in Southern California to this day.
Yeah, line them up!
And one of those people is James Lee, a rec assistant at Gilbert Lindsay Park. Lee brings out a picture of Wrigley Field from one of the baseball storage lockers.
This building right here used to be right across the street from where I live.
His hand points a little beyond left field.
That's the house I lived in as a child. And when they tore this building down, this was my playpen. I always dreamed of baseball, the whole existence. And I'm like, if I ever get my own team, I would love to coach them here at this here site.
And that's just what he did.
Look at him, Jonathan. Keep your eye on him all the way to the base. Only on third base. Nobody
Lee was
else.
One of the people who got Little League of America and other organizations to pitch in money to bring baseball back to this block of South Los Angeles. 12 years later, there are about 200 kids playing in the Wrigley Field Little League program here at the park. Lee coaches several of the teams.
Let's go, Tigers!
Parents like Gisette Baena say Little League Baseball has been instrumental in improving the neighborhood. She says she didn't know about the history of the park, so I show her a picture of the old Wrigley Stadium.
Wow. See, I didn't know that. I was born actually in 78, so I didn't know that we had a stadium here.
Isn't that pretty amazing?
It is. It is.
And while there may not be thousands of fans watching in the stands, baseball is alive and well in South L.A. David Chong, Annenberg Radio News.
Every week, more than 100 families lose their homes in the city of Los Angeles because of foreclosures. Sandra Altamirano was in Hyde Park today, where Jesse Jackson spoke about the crisis.
Community was a word that came up over and over as residents joined Reverend Jackson for a walk up and down the streets of Hyde Park. It's a word that means a lot to residents like Karen and Herman Lee, who have lived in the area for more than 20 years. They're just one of many families who were close to losing their home. They sought help from the Los Angeles Neighborhood Housing Service.
We didn't want a crisis to transpire and have to touch what meager savings that we do have, and then the next thing you know, we're losing the house.
Like many families, the Lees lived paycheck to paycheck, but Karen Lee says seeking help is not always easy.
It's, to me, foolish pride, and we all have that, but some people are willing to go that far, you know, to not let everybody know, you know, I have a problem here. I need help. And see, it's too late. By the time they seek help, it's too late.
More than half of families facing foreclosures never call for help. Reverend Jesse Jackson says that this has to change.
So many people in this predicament feel embarrassed that they did something wrong. They knew something. They got schemed on. This is a massive scam. It's a massive fraud. They did their best against the odds.
Ronald Martinez is a senior credit officer with Neighborhood Counseling Services. His job is to help people keep their homes.
Clearly, it's just to serve. Yeah. To the extent that we're able to serve, we become a very happy family. And that's what it's all about.
Organizations like Neighborhood Housing Services act as a first line of defense in the foreclosure crisis. Their mission is to help more families like the Lees keep their homes and spread a message of hope that help is out there. Sandra Altamirano, Annenberg Radio News.
I spoke with Eric Sussman, a lecturer at UCLA's Anderson Graduate School of Management. Sussman explained why residents of South LA have been particularly affected by the mortgage crisis.
You know, there have been a lot of communities that have been hard hit by foreclosures and certainly defaults on mortgages. That would include, you know, Riverside County, San Bernardino County, and Sacramento, up in Sacramento, too. So, but there's a lot of blame to go around. Certainly, on the lender side, there was easy money that Wall Street made funding available for basically any borrower without consideration of really, or certainly effective consideration of whether this person had the means to pay back what they were borrowing. They had these very favorable terms, these teaser rates that would start off at very low levels but would ratchet up over time. And again, there wasn't consideration of, is this borrower going to have the wherewithal, the income, to meet the payments going forward, even though they may meet them on, at time zero. So certainly there's a lot of blame from Wall Street's perspective. There's blame with mortgage bankers and brokers who are more than happy to push these loans on people because, of course, they make money on funding and commissions. And I think we also, I do believe in that adage that the Lord helps those who help themselves in some cases, not all. But certainly in some cases, borrowers were too darn ready, willing to take on excessive debt. And, they saw what was happening with real estate prices. There was this view that trees grow to the sky, that, my house is worth $200,000 now or $300,000, whatever the number is. That is, of course it's going to be worth $400,000 in a year. And so what's the big deal if I borrow 90% plus of its value today?
Eric Sussman teaches real estate and investment finance at UCLA. Now we check in with Ashley Chang to find out what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Well, thanks, Jennifer. Well, I'm telling you tonight, you definitely need to check in because we're starting off our Vote 2008 presidential election coverage. So we'll be reviewing the year ahead, and we're talking to a political science department chair, and he's telling us a lot more about the election. So I'll see you tonight at 6 o'clock.
Thanks, Ashley. Check out the Wrigley Field link on our website to see what Wrigley Field looks like today and for a look at the original field. That's it for Annenberg Radio News.